Quick shout out to our sponsor, Dealfront. Struggling to reach decision makers? Dealfront has you covered. It's your all-in-one platform to target ideal leads and close deals. Dealfront stands out with live European data in multiple languages, giving you insights and access others can't match. Finding the right decision makers is now just a few clicks away. Dealfront combines market signals, web visitors, and EU company databases, all while ensuring GDPR compliance. Ready to transform your sales game? Get your free demo at dealfront.com. That's dealfront.com. Or check the link in the description and show notes. Elevate your sales strategy with Dealfront. Hello, listeners, watchers, fans, and subscribers, and including the happy podders. Welcome to a brand new chapter of the SDR Disco Call Show. At this point, I'd like to give an introduction if you're brand new and it's your first time joining us. This show is about the world of tech sales and sales development. Tech sales, think about software such as BrandWatch, LinkedIn, or the apps that you use on your phone. And when it comes to salespeople, it could be these people that are either introducing this service to you on an outbound level, or perhaps inbound when you've been on the website and you want to have a demo and stuff. And my job and my role in this show is to find great and interesting people that work in this industry, understand how did they get into this, pick their brains as to how did they build their career within sales development to help you understand what is this all about. Perhaps you're also in this role and you want to get some insights and tips. And my name is Neil Bouyan. If you're watching this on our YouTube channel, what would really help us out is if you give a like, comment, and subscribe down below. And if you're listening to this in your local podcast platform, and again, if you're driving, don't do this whilst you're driving, but please give us a comment, share, and rating, and help get the word out there by sharing this episode. So with this episode, I'm very excited because we've had this guest through the door already, and that conversation was so good that I asked this person to come back onto the show. So, Gez, could you reintroduce yourself? Who are you? What do you do? Where do you work? And what do they do?
Thanks for that, Neil. So I'm Ashley Ormond. I'm the Senior Manager for Global Strategic Sales Development. Bit of a mouthful. So I work for a company called BrandWatch. So basically, we help large global brands and smaller businesses as well understand the consumers at the speed of social. So social listening, taking all that data online and putting it into actionable insights for them. Based in Brighton, or just outside of Brighton. Really excited to be back on again, Neil.
Well, it's a pleasure and privilege to have you back on, Ash, and thank you for the introduction. So guests and listeners, normally what we do at this point, if it was a brand new guest, is we would go to their LinkedIn profile, but we've been there before. But as a general reminder, Ash's LinkedIn profile will be in the show notes and description. So if you want to connect with him, feel free to reach out and pick his brain. But what I'd love to do at this point is just have a quick recap on the last episode. What I'm kind of getting from you, Ash, is you're the sort of person that can take a situation and kind of flip it into a new route or path. Would you agree?
Yeah, I always like to look on the bright side, if you like. I think especially what happened to me, obviously there's people out there in worse situations, you know. Mm-hmm. I met a lot of people in hospital who was like losing their legs, and I was faced with amputation and stuff like that. And then because that obviously didn't happen because I was so young, it put things in a lot of perspective. I'd be in a hospital bed next to someone else who just had like both their legs amputated, and they'd be like crying themselves to sleep and stuff like that. Mm. And it just makes you feel like, actually, I'm pretty lucky, you know?
Yeah, 100%.
I think that's really important to kind of take through life, as there's always someone out there that's probably worse than you. So, like, knocking on someone's door and asking them to sign a bit of paper is there is worse things you could be out there doing, you know?
Feels like years ago, but it was only a couple of months ago. Yeah. But again, as mentioned, it's great to have you back on board, Ash. So I think me, myself, our guests and listeners would love to know, since our last discussion, what's new with Ash?
So since last time, you probably have heard, I was hiring quite aggressively. Thankfully, I have found 6 new people to join my team who are going to be starting next month. really, really, really excited to have them on board. So it's been a hectic time, I must say. Interviews, yeah, just it's just been so full on, and now it's the kind of transition into onboarding the plan. How can I ramp these people as quickly as possible? Because, which might be a surprise to some, all of the people that I've hired are not coming from an SDR background.
Ooh.
So that is... Go on, Neil.
Yeah, that isn't... Sorry, tell me more.
Yeah, so if anything, I think this is a bit of a kind of philosophy of mine, that I've always kind of encouraged or looked at people that haven't had an SDR background previously for the reasons of, right? One, I can mold them into being a high-performing SDR. Two, if this is their brand new, like, if this is their first time going into a tech role, if you like, the hunger there is undeniable, right? And what I found previously is when you hire people who've been in SDR roles before and then they come into a new SDR role, all they're focusing on is the next step, right? They're not focused on the journey to get to that next step, whichever which it may be.
Yeah.
So, and ultimately it opens up the pool, right? The talent pool for a number of different people out there. And I think going from people's experience, personal experience, and also different sales experience they're currently in, I think it's just, it's just always worked really well for my team, basically. A lot of ex-recruiters coming on board.
I love that. Well, first and foremost, congratulations for getting 6 new members onto your team.
Thank you.
They are very lucky to have you in as a manager. I think there's three sides of this that I'd love to explore, because with some people, and I've seen it on LinkedIn, the job market is crazy in tech and sales. And, you know, one of the priorities for an SDR or BDR manager is hiring. And that's one of the hardest things to do. So the three points or pillars that I'd love to ask your thoughts or get insight into is, what was it like hiring? What worked for you to get in these 6 people? I'd love to delve on the personalities or the things that you saw worked really well in these people's interviews for them to be selected. And then once we've concluded with that, I then kind of want to go on to a bit more about personal dev. But first one is, what worked for you to get these 6 people in?
So I can't take all the credit, you know, although I'd love to. I think we've got I'm very lucky that I work with an exceptional internal recruiter. So she's been doing a really good job jobbing out there. But of course, she's supporting other sales teams as well.
Yeah.
So I'm very active on kind of LinkedIn when it comes to hiring. I will go out and I will approach people myself. We'll get referrals in and so on. But I think for me, I wanted to have a bit of a process in place to ensure they knew or they understood what they was coming into. Obviously, if you're coming from a recruitment background, you've got to be used to jumping on the phone all day, right? And talking to people all day. The difference is connect rates when you're an SDR are vastly different, right? People are not sitting around waiting for you to call them for a job. People working, you know, so it's that kind of nuance that you have to kind of be upfront and honest with everyone. So I would get people to do a mock cold call after they send me a cold email. So I'd give them the scenario and get them to send it over, and then we'd discuss it on their interview. But for me, I would say the thing that stands out and the thing that works well is I focus more on the questions they ask rather than the answers they give. Being an SDR is all about curiosity, right? Yeah. And if you can't sit there and ask me some really good questions, then you're not going to do it to someone at C level when you're reaching out to massive global companies, right?
Yeah. I love all of that, and I can relate. So, you know, working closely with your recruiter or talent acquisition person, and also understanding they've got their own KPIs and targets hit and they're trying to hire for the rest of the business.
Yeah.
I remember one great recruiter, Rose, if you're listening, Rose, she was helping me build out the team at Happio. But we really took the time to go out for lunch. She said she understands what we're looking for in terms of an SDR, but she wanted to know, what does it mean to be an SDR? What's their day-to-day? What's the personality types? You know, what's the hunger you're looking for and all of that? And I think having that conversation with your recruiter helps them source the type of people that you want. And I also love how you said about, you know, the questions they ask you. Because, you know, I would, as a former manager, like, what do you know about the business? What do you know about our founder's journey? What do you know about our products, competition, logos, and whatnot? But I was more, to your point, wanting to know about their curiosity about us. So what does onboarding look like? What does progression look like? What is the team dynamics like? How can you help me? These are the things I was looking for. Mm-hmm. But to your point, it was kind of like you could almost say like the interview is a role play of a role play of what would they look like in front of prospects?
Yeah.
You know, how would they handle that conversation and their business acumen and level? And I wouldn't expect them to be perfect and polished, because that's my job to help them become that, you know, and take the obstacles out of their way to help them out. But I think when I'm coaching and I'm coaching reps to go through interviews, I do also ask them, like, what questions have you prepared for them?
Mm-hmm.
And some are stumped. I'm like, what should I ask? So I'd love to know, what do you think are good questions for a rep to ask the manager in the interview, Ash?
I think that's a really good question, and there's a lot to unpack there, Neil. That's I'd like to start by saying there's some really bad questions.
Okay.
That I've had.
Yeah.
One that stands out to me during this recruitment process was someone was asking me. They asked me, "Where do I see myself in 5 years?" Right. So I thought, like, there's a kind of laying the ground, so they're going to dig into something. And then they asked me, like, how I felt when I went into being an SDR. And they really didn't ask any questions that they learned anything from, other than from me. And then at the end, I asked them, I said, during this whole interview stage, what have you learned that you didn't know before? And they kind of sat there and thought, you could see them thinking. And then he was like, nothing. I was like, this was, you've missed a little bit of an opportunity here. This is your chance to find out about your role. What are the challenges? What to expect? I'm an open book, right? I will tell you the good, bad, and the ugly. Like, it really, because I'd rather just tell you everything now up front, so you're not surprised by anything moving forward, right? But I think some really good questions I've had. Some really good questions I've had. There's been so many. I think generally it is not just about asking one question, right? It's about building on that question. Like, why is that important to you? What, like, just really having that curiosity. I know I'm not giving you any answer there in terms of I don't want to give too much away, you know, to people.
Or perhaps to give your mind time to recollect those things. If I kind of share a story where, you know, they're asking questions and it feels like it's scripted. You know, we've all been there. Maybe we Google what questions should we ask the hiring manager around there. But what they may be missing is the act of listening and then following up on from that question. So what have you learned in the career whilst you were here? What do you learn as an SDR? But what were your mistakes? The follow-up question is, how did you overcome them? The follow-up to that could be, how long did that take for that to click?
Yeah.
You know? And also, like, I think really good questions are also, you know, like, how much of the team are hitting target? How long does it take to be fully productive and efficient coming into your team? And similar to yourself, I have always been an open book. And it kind of sounds, I remember I used to get a lot of jip from VPs of sales with my interview style. But I would say, like, this is tough. You face rejection on a daily basis. It's really hard to connect with people. Some people may see our solution as a nice to have rather than a need to have.
Yeah.
Because I wanted to be open and say how freaking hard it can be. But if you're up for the challenge, come on board because we've got a bunch of people that are also working towards the same goal.
Yeah.
And a lot of VPs have said, like, Neil, you need to sell the role. We need to, like, hit our hiring target. I'm like, yeah, I get that. But if I get somebody where I'm just selling, it's like a bad salesperson where you just want them to sign the deal.
Yeah.
And then what happens is you bring on the customer. They realize the product's not up to scratch. It's not what they were expected. And guess what happens? They churn. Mm. And that can happen with hires as well. But the thing that I used to say to the VPs was, you know, if we bring this person on board and it doesn't work out, that could cost us 3x their salary because we have onboarding, equipment, hiring, but then we have to do that in reverse when they leave and exit the business. So I'd rather have the people that are ready to roll up the sleeves and do it.
Yeah.
So yeah, I can totally rate. But coming back to yourself with the questions.
Yeah. So, and I think you just touched on something there. I think, like, you can't overpromise, right, and underdeliver, and that's just the same with anything. I think what one of the a really good question that made me think was someone asked me, like you said, about the how much of the team are hitting quota and stuff like that, and then they said, "What are you like as a coach or a person when things are not going so well?"
Ah,
and it really made me kind of sit there and kind of think of a scenario when, like, maybe we wasn't where we needed to be and in terms of kind of target and stuff like that. Like, people had left. It was really difficult. And it made me think, like, what was I like during that time?
Yeah.
And then it made me think after the interview as well, like, how could I pinpoint that moment and learn from it, you know? And I think that went into kind of the kind of self-reflection kind of aspects as well. And I think any kind of questions that really make someone think, especially at interview, and my advice would definitely be, don't be afraid to ask difficult questions during interview as well. It really is a two-way street, like massively a two-way street. And if you don't treat it like that, then I think you're there for the taking, to be honest. I think you'll probably get more no's than you will yeses, you know? Yeah. And I've been helping, or like others that are not even at Brandwatch, not even applying for Brandwatch, like other people just across LinkedIn who have come to me and asked for some help in terms of interviews and stuff like that. And I mean, there's some really good people out there. But I think for me, it is asking about the right questions. But I think prior to that as well, I saw a post on LinkedIn the other day, and it said about an email that you should send the hiring manager to stand out from the crowd. And although it was a really good email, and although I do encourage people to do that, I think you just got to jump on the phone and just pick up and speak to the hiring manager. That is the number one thing. I think maybe 4 out of the 6 people cold called me.
So you did get a call in the end, and a couple.
Yes. I was screaming out for it, though, Neil, on LinkedIn. But I think, there's a number of different things you can do to stand out, right?
Okay. So we've definitely got great insights about the recruitment drive, the tactics, and how to approach that interview. So I'd love to know, on that second pillar, what was it about those candidates that did stand out in the interview that made you think, like, you're coming on board?
I think the questions they asked were, number one, it made you really think that they could ask some really good questions when they're in front of prospects.
Yeah.
I think a lot of it was, there was one guy, his calmness, you know, he was so calm. It didn't matter what I was asking him or how the conversation was going. He was so unbelievably calm and collected. And then he said he'd been kind of rejected a couple of times prior. And when we'd done his mock call, it was really good. He had a really good structure. And I always say to everyone, look, I'm not looking for perfection here. I'm just looking for a bit of a framework and how you'll overcome objections and the listening part. And he just kind of blew me away. And literally after, I said that was the best one I've had during my time here recruiting. And later on, I sent him an offer. I think just how you come across obviously the research part is really important as well. I've had people that have clearly done zero research. I think even not knowing the types of products we have or the names of them, I'm not asking people to
be the expert.
Yeah, do you know what I mean? Like, I can coach them that, but that demonstrates a willingness and a desire to join your business, right? That you've done your research, you've checked out the competitors. Even if you don't say these are your competitors, you can slip it into your answers or even questions that just like ticks off boxes. And I think the people that I interviewed and hired, they were so good at that as well. They all knew what we were doing, where we were going, what products we, and also the challenges we'd face, right? And I think for Brand Watch in general, we sell to so many different personas, different verticals. Like there's no one clear ICP, so it is quite difficult for people coming into the business to get their head around that. But some of them just kind of knew, you know, they just knew it and had that kind of desire, that willingness to get stuck in. And the follow-ups were brilliant as well. After every interview, they would just follow up with a message, just thanking me, asking for next steps. And I think another important thing, they all closed me at the end. Have you got any reservations about me? Is there anything you'd like me to elaborate on? What are the next steps? And I think that bodes well during an interview process.
I love that. I love that. Such great advice. And I think because a lot of people that I'm either coaching or, you know, in the LinkedIn DMs are looking for help, I think those are some really great insights and tips, and goes beyond some of the tips that I've given to people. But I think going back to when I was a hiring manager, things that stood out to me, I did the same thing as you. I love to hire people that didn't have a sales background predominantly, for the reasons like you said. They're moldable, they're coachable, they're fresh, they're clean. This is a new world to them, because it's that thing of you can't teach an old dog new tricks. And I agree with your point of if they've been an SDR in a previous organization, there are some habits and some mindsets that they can't get out of based on their previous experience. But with these new people, and even thinking back to my time at Happier, I hired somebody straight fresh out of uni that was studying law, somebody who had a psychology background, then somebody who had a performing arts, like comedy clubs background.
Nice.
And they'd also tried to do their own startups in the back end as well. I had somebody that worked in traditional manufacturing sales, you know, experience of software or tech or anything like that. I hired recruiters because I knew they're really good hunters and they're already versed in all having good conversations with MDs or C-level.
Yeah,
100%. But I think part of it came from my own background of not working in sales and the fact that sales changed my life in terms of my earning potential, my quality of life, my education, my learning. And what I would love to do is get more people into this. So sometimes, I'm not saying I found a soft side to them, but I wanted to help these people, but they had to be able to help themselves first. So things that I really loved was the ones that did send me LinkedIn requests before the interview, saying they're looking forward to having a chat with me. Some, not many people gave me calls, but I would get videos on the LinkedIn DM or a voice note. That really was like, oh, I like that.
Yeah, 100%.
And I can imagine some of our listeners saying, well, if you've not worked in tech and sales and prospecting, maybe you're not aware of doing these things. And I 100% agree. So that's why I don't expect it, but it did help them stand out. But why we're having this show is to help those people that are thinking about it, the things that you could do to stand out with it.
Yeah.
Other things that really stood out to me was people joining the Zoom or the recruitment interview a couple of minutes early. Because if you turned up late 3 to 5 minutes, again, it's not the end of the world, but that makes me think of how would you connect with that prospect. The other things, like similar to yourself, they didn't have to be an expert in our products or solutions, because that comes with the training, the onboarding, and the coaching. But I wanted them to give me, in their own opinion, what we do. And a question that I used to ask them was like, Ash, you've probably been on our website and stuff. If you were to explain to your friends and family at dinner what our company, how would you explain it? Because I just wanted to understand, did they grasp the concept They don't have to fully explain it, but just grasp the concept of what we do or the space that we're in. Also, you know, they wouldn't have to tell a full customer story, but they could quote a couple of customers we have, but say why they bought us or why they became a customer. That was really good. Sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, I always ask if you had like a magic wand or you could paint the picture of our perfect customer, who would that be and why?
Nice.
I think that stumped a few people, but other people just seem to grasp it straight away. So and I suppose, like you say, it's just trying to get them to demonstrate that they just get it, right? And I think going into like a SaaS or a tech role, there's so many nuances. There's so many things that you won't know, right? Coming into this, and especially with the abbreviations of different things,
the acronyms,
you're never gonna know that unless you're in this kind of world. And I think for me, it was more demonstrate the effort that you've put in, right, rather than just showing up and just hoping for the best. Like it's all about the effort, and I think that is an SDR's role, right? You can have all the skill in the world, but if you don't put the effort in, you're getting nowhere, right?
Yeah.
But if you're lacking a few bits of skill here and there, but you've got shitloads of effort, you're on your way, right? That is the hardest bit, I think, for this role, is the putting in the consistent effort of picking up the phone when you don't want to, you know?
You're right. It's to quote John Barrows, it's the give a shit factor. You know, you can definitely tell somebody who has a vested interest versus somebody who's just doing it for the sake of it. And, you know, thinking back to the interviews, I had some people where I knew I was a number in their calendar in a number of interviews.
Mm-hmm.
And that's fine. Like, you know, you're on the hunt for the right opportunity as you would as a salesperson. But questions to kind of kick off the interview, I would ask, you know, like, you know, I used to ask them, like, what do you know about me? And what I was looking for is so the great ones is that, I checked out your LinkedIn. I see that you've got your own sales training company. I've seen that back in the day you was at this company. I haven't read full much, but I've had a good, just like a nose round. And I said, that's enough. So that shows me ahead of the call, you're reviewing who I am. But if the people said, oh, I don't know.
Not good.
But at that point, I'd say, okay, look, but then I would educate them in the interview and then say, so if you're going to be connecting with prospects, one of our main channels would be on LinkedIn, where you'd look at, you know, do a little bit of homework 3 to 5 minutes before jumping on a call or writing an email. So that's really important. So it was, if you haven't done it, I'll teach you what you need to be doing. Because what I'm also hoping is they can take this into the next interview if that's where they're going, right?
Yeah. Feedback's important.
Yeah. The other questions I wanted to know is, like, what do you know about our history? And this would stump some people because they'd be looking at the website 30 seconds before the call. All right, you provide a social media management platform, something. But then, you know, if you're looking at Eric Lobar Larson, the founder, Falcon Social, Brandwatch, they did this back in the day and all of that. I wanted to know what their curiosity was of knowing who we are and how we were built. But again...
Out of interest, Neil.
Yeah.
Why do you think that type of question would be important to ask, like their kind of history?
Good point. Because I think when we're selling products and services, initially with most startups, the founders realized a problem back then, which then prompted them to start creating a solution around that thing. And that's kind of where the startup was born. And again, some people may not be aware of that's the case, but I think going back to my first SDR job, Zora, Tienzo was the CMO and employee number 11 at Salesforce.com, and he saw the world moving to subscriptions, but he knew that Salesforce was only built for one-time transactional business and it wouldn't be able to handle this new shift. So we went to Mark Benioff and said, I'm going to go build a billing engine for subscription businesses and SaaS businesses. And Mark said, cool idea, here's 50 million, go build it, I'm going to buy you one day. And Tien said, you're not going to buy it, we're going to go public. That was inspirational for me to think. And I'm going off on a little bit of a tangent, but the other lesson that I learned from Tien in the world of startups, he says you either have the disruptors or the disrupted.
Mm-hmm.
right? So he said, we are disrupting the ERP space. So we're going up against the SAPs, the Oracles, the success factors of the world, the NetSuites. Like, we're coming to mess up their market. And he said, sometimes what happens, Neil, is these little innovative startups come along and the big dogs don't look at them, but then loads of people start getting into that and they become disrupted. And what either happens is they pivot or they acquire these smaller companies. Mm-hmm. So if we think of a real life example of a startup that disrupted the industry, was Uber. Because prior to that, it was black cabs in London. And I remember being in the Zora office, being the BDR, and we had a company come through called Halo. Mm. And Halo was the booking app for black taxis, because they're, you know, I don't think they're in business anymore. But we spoke about Uber, the subscription model. I said, yeah, Uber's not going to be around for much. You know, it's all about black cabs. There's a lot of loyalty behind it. Who's going to want to, you know, surge price in that? It's not going to work. And we convinced them to think about a subscription model, and they said no. They went out of business, but we all know the history with Uber. But coming back to your point, it's taking a vested interest as to why does this company exist?
Mm-hmm.
So the advice to the person that didn't know this, I would say, do you know what? Go on Google, just type in the company and put in the founders and just click the news tab. And you can find articles of, you know, funding articles will also say, where did the company start? Who were the original founders? Why did they do this? Because again, I think, you know, you've really asked me a good question, Ash. I think the reason it's a good question is you need to believe in a product in order to sell and prospect for it. And if you understand where it's come from and you believe in that vision and that mission, you're going to be more inclined to want to promote it, talk to prospects versus something you don't really believe in. And I've been there. I've been in companies where I didn't believe in the product. But yeah, really good question. Thank you for that, dude. You've thrown me. You've absolutely thrown me. And I love that. I love that. You've made me think. So yeah, there's a good...
Yeah, I was just curious because if anything... When you mentioned that, just immediately I thought, why would you care? You know, why would you care about that? But I think, yeah, you've explained it really well. For me, I don't think it really matters if they know the history or not. That's the good thing about this, right? It's the difference of opinions and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But I think we're like the root of that question, like you says, like understanding where they come from to where they're going and stuff like that. That is really good. And it does put it in perspective, right? So, and like you say, it's that inspiring aspect of it.
Yeah.
And I suppose you can find out things that you never knew as well. Like for Brandwatch, for example, like Brandwatch was created before Instagram was, you know?
Yeah.
This is the kind of thing that we're like, one of our biggest things is we're like getting data from them kind of platforms to make decisions for these large businesses, right?
Yeah.
So yeah, I thought that was a really good point. But like with anything, I think just going back to the feedback piece,
yeah,
it's all about like what have you kind of learned and taken from that interview or that research to then go on and move forward with it.
Yeah.
Because what I really do encourage a lot of people to do when they are seeking new employment or going out and looking for jobs and so, is connect with people in that team.
Yeah.
Like connect with people in that team, find out the real, like what is actually going on, right? No one's going to give you the kind of everything that you possibly could want, but they can give you a bit of a sense of what's going on, you know. I'd encourage that before you apply, because ultimately you might build up a bit of a relationship with that person and they can refer you in, meaning that you got your foot in the door and they end up getting a bit of referral like bonus out of it as well. Yeah. So that's something I would encourage for sure.
I love that. And you're right, you know, coming back to that history piece, so those are two different leadership mindsets, and I love that. And again, it was a great question, and it has actually made me think, well, why would they care about that? Because then again, it was more based on my wants and how I saw it. But then giving the advice is to, you know, go research something to really understand if you want to be there, right? But I think another thing which really helped with, you know, these people coming on board, and referrals are a great way because you get to learn the culture, the people, what it's actually like to be in that role, what's it like to report to this manager and stuff like that. But I think the other thing kind of where you alluded to earlier, sorry, this is where I'm going with it, is you've hired some people without these sales backgrounds. Another interesting thing for me was those people in the interviews that maybe launched their own cocktail bar business or tried to launch an app or, you know, went on an entrepreneurship degree within their university, or perhaps they had their own business with their father, their parents or something, and they tried to do. What I was looking for, Ash, was the entrepreneurial spark.
Oh, yeah.
Of trying something themselves.
Yeah.
And a lot of the SDRs that I spoke to, when we spoke about where do you see yourself going, coming into this role, like what's the motivation behind it? And some of the people said to me, one day I want to have my own business, but I want to work in a company that's currently doing it so I get to learn from it. And that used to turn me on in a business sense, right? But I was just like, yeah.
A bit weird.
Yeah. But it did. It made me go gaga. But yeah, I think what was really hard for me was when I had to chat to the VP of sales of all the candidates and why I felt they were a fit, some of them pushed back because we want at least a year experience sort of the KPIs. And I said, here's the thing. If you hire mirrored versions of the current team today, that doesn't help with diversity. And you want to bring something in a bit different.
100%, yeah.
To then grow out the team because it's those different personality and traits. Because I said, I don't just want an army of soldiers that look all the same. I want a bit of a mix because that's what enhances the team, right? But
And I think with that, it's more about like the diversity of thought and experience. And I think that's where I've been really lucky because I've got a team of people who have come from different backgrounds, different life experiences, and it just seems to like work, you know. And just going back to the entrepreneurship aspect, and just let's have it right. When I say I'm hiring people without like tech sales background, they do have some kind of like sales background already. It's not just people just straight out of uni, because I need that resilience and the kind of the understanding of like this isn't going to be easy, you know. But I did hire someone who was actually running his own company. He was founder and managing director at a company, and he was running it for, I think it was about 5 years, right, straight from uni, started running it, ended up getting funding for it and stuff like that. And on the face of thing, it's like, that is amazing, right? And I asked him, like, why is it that you're leaving that? You know, because the business, like, he had other people that they collectively started running it together. So the four of his friends were still running it. And then he was taking this and he said, look, I just want to go in a like, different direction. And I was like, look, what's the real reason? You know? And he said, oh, no, I don't anticipate that this is going to like keep going the way it has been.
Yeah.
So then the question after that is, let's pretend it does go and it like skyrockets, you know? Like,
then what?
And it does go, would you just naturally leave the kind of SDR role and just go back into it, you know? And it made him kind of think about that as well. But it's that entrepreneurial spirit, I think, is really good. But for me, I've just hired someone on the kind of flip of that, not someone who's looking to run a business. I'm hiring someone who's actually run a business, got funding for it, done really well, and now looking to just go into, because running a business isn't easy, you know?
No.
It consumes your life.
I love that.
It's interesting that there's so many different types of experiences that can crack into tech, I think, for sure.
100%. And the more people coming into the industry that from different backgrounds and whatnot really makes me happy, because these are, you know, the next wave of leaders, whether it be in sales, marketing, customer success, or founders of their own business. I love to be imagining I'm that small little cog in this person's career. and one day they're going to be doing it. Because I've seen it a lot of times where people have gone off and launched their own business. I'm so proud of you. Or they've been promoted, or, you know, they've gone into a different role or a completely different industry. I'm like, yeah, love that, love that. But I think the next topic I'd love to come on to is, so in our last episode, we were talking about, as you just touched upon, around the importance of resilience, you know, maintaining that positive sort of mindset. So like with this new team that's coming on board, you're going to be going through the onboarding, training them, ramping them up.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on helping them with personal growth? How are you looking to implement that? And, you know, including when they get the rejections, they get the setbacks, or things haven't gone out, where they're fresh and this is all new to them. How are you looking to implement personal growth and development for these new people?
I think that's a really good question. It's something that's been at the forefront of my mind, I would say. I think once the kind of mindset is right, everything else will fall into place. I think this isn't an easy job, right?
Yeah.
It really isn't. There's times where, and it's not even just about the rejection, right? It's not even about getting on the phone and then speaking to someone and getting rejected. I think it's the a bit of a slog beforehand where you're trying to get through to someone and all you're hitting is voicemails all day, you know? So that's something that I've really taken into account. So, and I think one of the Sana rules is you have to fail. Sometimes you have to fail to win.
Yeah.
So what I'm trying to instill is like a culture of let's fail fast, right? Let's fail fast. Let's try different things. And then we can kind of kick on and try different aspects. So we know what we need, right, to kind of hit quota, right? We know like how many calls it takes to book a meeting, like on average, and we've got all them kind of numbers in place, right? So spend 80% of our time doing those regular day-to-day tasks to get us where we need to be, and then 20% of their time trying different things, right? And then if they try different things like video outreach, voice notes, whatever, and that starts getting results, put that into your 80% and then use that 20 to try something else. Try, test it, measure it. Have you got any success from it? And it keeps it fresh. And I think for them, that will help in terms of like mindset and trying different things and them things not working out. But it's okay, you know?
Yeah.
And I think
it's like all a test, isn't it? It's like testing and finding out together, right?
100%.
Yeah.
And if anything, I think with the coaching that we're lucky to have as well, there's elements of that that are going to be around kind of mindset, right? Getting into the right mindset and just knowing that there will, like, there's going to be more rejections, more heartache, more like challenges than there are wins sometimes, right?
Yeah.
So it's just trying to keep that steady level of when you're having a challenge, don't go too low. Don't think it's the end of the world. And when you're having a win, don't think that this is it, you've made it, right? Because it ain't. It can quickly just be swept under your feet, right? So I'm going to focus a lot around the different roles that they play. So they've got the husband, the boyfriend, the brother, the sister, that's the role outside of work, right?
Yeah.
And then they've got the role of SDR or ADR inside of work. So like just like the gym, for example, right? You go to the gym, at the gym, you smash it out, you're a gym rat, right? You're a gym rat, fully fledged, going in there, your vest on, whatever. Sometimes you might not have a good session, right?
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean you're a bad person. That doesn't mean that you're failing in life. And that kind of mindset and taking that mindset into your SDR work day and saying, I've had a bad day. But that doesn't mean that you can go on and you're having a bad life. You've made a bad decision. So you leave it at the door. Do you know what I mean? I think that's really important. And I think, having that kind of coaching element as well is just crucial. And I think having that mindset and that resilience throughout your entire life, whether it's work, outside of work or whatever, is so important. Interestingly, my daughter, Ava, she's going to be 9 this month. actually in 5 days, she's going to be 9. She's been going to an after school club on a Friday, and the person there, Chris, I can't remember his surname, but he runs a course called the Fearless Academy, right?
Okay. Tell me more.
So he builds up confidence in young children, right? Gives them the confidence to take on new challenges, the confidence to try different things, the confidence to fail, right? And learn from those. And because Ava's got autism, different things challenge her in different ways, right?
Yeah.
So like loud noises, unexpected kind of things.
Changes to routine. Yeah.
It's just, and yeah, like it's really difficult. And I think being at that age at primary school, to go off on a little bit of a tangent.
Go for it, please.
But being at primary school is always difficult anyway, right? Someone says, I don't know, they point at you and they go, oh, you look like poo. Do you know what I mean? Like other people go, oh, no, whatever. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. But she would really take that to heart and be like, why don't I say that? Like, and really analyze that, like overanalyze it. And she would take that with her. But since she's been doing this coaching with Chris, she's ended up like joining a football team.
Awesome.
And although she's had some really difficult times when she's playing the match because it's very overwhelming, everyone's shouting, there's loads going on, she don't know what to do and stuff like that, the training is just, it just brings me, it just fills my heart with joy and love, you know?
Watching her
just get involved, smiling, happy, and it like mixing with different people as well. And I think that's the importance of having someone there, like a coach, for example, to give you that freedom or giving you that license to fail, and it's okay, you know? It's okay to try different things and it doesn't work out, you know? And I think there's so many different situations where that ties into sales, where people feel like they need to be perfect. They need to send the perfect email. They need to do the perfect research. They need to make the perfect opener on their or whatever.
Yeah.
It's like, that isn't life. You know, nothing in life is perfect. So, but the action you take through anything, that's where you should focus your energy on.
Yeah.
Can't remember what the question was about a year ago since I started talking, but
I love it. And I think like the vibe that I'm getting from, you know, that question of, it was around personal development and growth.
Mm-hmm.
And we're definitely going to touch on the autism piece in it, because that's something close to my heart.
Yeah.
But what I'm hearing in that is with your team and the conversations you're having with them and the support that you saw also mirror to like your daughter, it's being a voice of reason and clarity and an empathetic voice to say that you don't have to have it perfect. You're you know, nobody's perfect. We try it again, but it's not being that overbearing harsh, you must do it this way, this is the way that it must be done, regimented, and talking to them like a human, you know. I think that's the vibe that I'm getting from this. It's that you have an understanding of where they are, what they could be thinking, and then supporting them to help them come to a conclusion. Because I think, as I've said on the show multiple times, when you're a manager, you're kind of wearing three hats. One, which is the managerial of leading a team, creating a strategy, motivating them, making sure they're hitting the operating rhythm. Then the other one is you're the operational person, where it's the KPIs, the metrics, the science behind the sales and the data. And the third one, which I'm more of a fan of, and I think why I love coaching, is the therapeutic side, or being the therapist. So I love how you have these different personalities of you being the husband, the girlfriend, the boyfriend, the wife, whatever, outside of work.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're putting on this persona of being an SDR and ADR within work. It is because, what do you call it? There aren't just one type of personalities. We have slices of different parts to our personality. And it's being able to let that person bring those transferable things into that role. So, you know, like I can think of him right now. Tom was one of my SDRs at Happio. He was, you know, in his late 30s, and he was applying for his SDR job, but he'd been a business owner, he's done comedy club, he's done performance acting and everything like that. But the thing with something like when he came into role, he said, yeah, you know, I'm kind of older than most SDRs. I said, dude, I'm like 30 odd as well. I love this SDR thing. And I know some SDRs that are older than me still doing this thing. But what Tom could also do, because he was a father, where there were reps in our team that were struggling or, you know, having emotional moments, he could really bring the best out of them by having a chat, a heart to heart, like giving them the passage. Oh, come on, dude, let's do that. And I could always, and I remember just sitting in the room in Amsterdam, just seeing like, yeah, the dude's, he's got leadership qualities, but he's bringing the other personality type to help enhance that team culture in that as well.
Yeah.
Sorry, go ahead. Was it good?
Yeah, I was going to say, and when, because I started my SDR career in my 30s as well. So, and I think it just gives you that there's so many things that you can bring into this position that you probably don't even think of either. Yeah. And I think you hit the nail on the head there with that, the aspect of the therapeutic stuff as well. I think that is ultimately very, very important because if people are not happy, you're not going to get the best out of them. 100%. If you're breathing down their neck and just like barking orders at them, or you're chasing them for KPIs for the sake of KPIs, they're going to switch off. They ain't going to be engaged. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. If you're if you genuinely care about how they progress, how they develop, and how they learn, and give them the tools they need to progress to their next path in their career, then your job's done, right?
Yeah.
That's all your job is as someone leading an SDR team, to give them the tools they need and the confidence they need to move on to other roles, you know?
I love that. I was doing a session this morning with another guest, Josh, and he said, like, your role as a manager is to remove obstacles out of your reps' way to make them successful.
Make their life.
And those obstacles could be mindset. It could be being blocked on how they're doing this, or, you know, the emotional side of being knocked with rejection. And again, being that voice of clarity and reason. And, you know, I think I, in my early sales career, like it was only a couple of months of being promoted to a manager, I became a dad. And my whole life perspective changed the way that I looked at everything. I wasn't motivated by the money anymore. I was motivated by people growing, succeeding, being happy. And you're right. If they're not happy in their outside life, and then it will bleed into their work. And, you know, sometimes with my reps, I'd look at them, then, you know, performance is low. And I'd ask the question, like, hat aside, are you okay? Because I could get this gut feeling that something, it wasn't related to work. And sometimes some managers miss that, that there could be something going on in their personal life, right? And coming to, you know, as also a father, a proud father of my Blakey, he's 9 next month. So we became dads at the same time, who also has autism, right? And you know what, one thing I'm really happy with is, like, I'm an advocate for autism acceptance, right? And seeing a lot of people on LinkedIn where you're finding out that they've recently been diagnosed in their adult life, they have children with autism, and I freaking love it. But similar to, you know, the way that you're parenting Ava with Blake, so his thing is stagecoach and performance, right?
Nice.
And thinking up until the age of 3, Blake wasn't verbal, he was non-verbal, and it was through watching films and songs that he started to grasp his words together, and then he started looking at me in the eyes, and then when hearing the I love you for the first time and actually responding to a question and not, you know, non-verbal babbling, I was just like, oh yeah.
Yeah.
But as Blake has grown older, it's also learning his moods. So he's new to things in life. So at stagecoach school, it was very overwhelming. There's lots of other people in the class. There are what people may deem as normal children or children without autism.
Yeah.
And Blake, you know, not understanding social cues or things like that. But the more he did his Saturday classes, all of a sudden, I'm seeing this young boy, my son, who I'm very proud of, growing his confidence, throwing sass back at me, dancing around the house and doing his routines and all of that. And I just sit there, and I'm picking him up later today. And I sit on the sofa and I don't say anything, but I look at him in admiration of, you have come so far. And I say, it's nothing to do with me. This is all your own thing. But equally, when, you know, he did his first performance on a stage in front of the whole school and all the other parents.
Oh, wow.
I remember just sitting in the back of the auditorium in, it was in Epsom, and seeing my little boy do the routine, interacting with the other people doing the play, and just sitting there. And I was in tears. I was just like, I'm so freaking proud of him. But I think when he did his first performance, like in terms of admission, like me and his mother are separated, but we're sitting next to each other, which we hadn't done for a number of years. And when he came off, he was in tears because he found that very overwhelming. But we were both, you know, saying, you've done really well. We were saying it really quietly. We said, okay, so what's making you feel that way? And just saying, look, you did really well. Brave. Blake's really brave. But, you know, the subsequent like performances after, my dude's a little diva. Like, he's loving it. He's bowing. He's like all like that. And then he comes running up to me and his mum and like hugging us. And like, we're saying, yeah, well done. So, but here's the thing, Ash, with as a father with a child with autism, because you have to take a different approach rather than being very direct and just saying, do this or that. Mm-hmm. But coming down to that, that's the thing I learned with Blake. Rather than talking to him when something's gone wrong, is I bow down to my knees, so I'm at his level. And this mindset is how I've spoken to my reps, is coming down to their level, not coming as an authoritative parent type thing.
Mm-hmm.
That I'm able to get a better connection with him and also understand. But here's the weird thing, like going on all the other autism workshops and like classes with other parents, finding out the triggers of sensory things like touch, smell, sound, you know, atmosphere, ambience in the room and all of that. Thinking back to myself, I went through the same challenges my son with autism had. And I've almost come to the conclusion that I myself may be on the spectrum, because it will answer a lot of things, such as I am very OCD with my time. There are certain foods I eat because of the sensory crunch that I get. Mm. I equally get very overwhelmed in, like, I was in London this week with my sales coach team, and I had to keep stepping out of the room a couple of times because my social battery was being drained and I'm not used to having to talk to loads of people. But similarly, when I was younger, it was emceeing and being on a stage and performing and doing it. And I was just like, yeah, so.
They say it's hereditary, don't they?
Yeah. And I remember being sitting in the room with other parents where there would be some dads that, oh, well, you know, it's just a label and, you know, they should like, when are they going to get fixed? And I was like, there's nothing to fix. It's part of them. But the more I've met with Blake's teachers and learning and other stuff and meeting some of the other parents, we kind of have this thing where we look at each other like, you're like us. I'm exploring the idea of potentially going for a formal diagnosis. And again, we've really opened up. This is why I love having conversations with you, Ash. But for a father, I think, because this is a topic both close to our hearts, what does it mean to you to be a father with a child of autism? And just wondering, how has that benefited you in life, sir?
I mean, it's not been easy.
No.
You know, it's definitely not been easy. I remember when Ava had a third birthday party, and we hired a hall out, and we had a load of people come, and there was music and like a bouncy castle and all this, and she literally gripped onto us, like me and my wife, so tight, and cried the whole time until everyone left, and then she was loving life.
Yeah,
and it was like, what is going on? Why? Do you know what I mean? Maybe it's too loud. Like, we don't know.
Yeah.
It's been really, really challenging. But I think it just gives you that different perspective, right? That everyone is different. Whether they... because I suppose, like, when you're in school, like, going back in the day, people would be different if they looked different, right?
Yeah.
But now, like, having Ava, and I've got Mia and Vinny as well, and she just needs some time away, you know? And I think just, like, it just, when she does things that are, like, small to other people, it's, like, monumental for us as a family, you know? Like, when she goes to football and she, even when she puts on a kit and she runs over and she, like, says hello to everyone else, like, she doesn't know them, you know? She's, like, still getting to know. That makes us proud. You know, but other people who are not in that situation, where they don't have anyone with like autism, ADHD, etc. They may look at that and go, why are they so I just sound alone, you know. But for us, that's like a massive moment, and I think it makes you appreciate these little things which you can then take into like work life, and then almost not care about the little things that maybe are not really that important, you know. And it means that you can just focus on the things that matter. And I think that's what the biggest thing that I've got from having Ava and all my kids, to be fair, is just try not to sweat the small things and just enjoy them while you can. And I think just going back to Chris and the Fearless Academy, he does like posts on like how to like be a parent or whatnot. And I think one of the things he said was you've only got really about 13 summers with your children, makes them count. And when you put it in that perspective, it's like, shit, you ain't got a lot of time left, you know, so you might as well enjoy it while you can.
Because I think definitely we're after this episode, we're going to get Chris's links, and I'll be happy to put them in the show notes and help promote that as well. It might be even a great resource for myself, but with Blake, as he's growing older, you don't need to do this for me, Daddy. Why are you treating me like a child? That's the conversation I'm having with him regularly. And it's fun. But, you know, to your point of sweating the small stuff at work, I think going through this autism journey with Blake and his mother and learning all of these things, I'm able to pick up on some things within people that I've trained, coached, or managed. And it has come to light that some of these people are on the spectrum or they have ADHD. But it's allowed me to kind of customize the way that I interact with them. And one story, which like it warms my heart from an experience that I had whilst working in a Belgian tech company. For privacy, I'm not going to mention their name. But I joined a startup where I had a team of SDRs, and HR approached me after working like a couple of quarters. And there was a lot of good feedback about Neil being a good, nice manager and a really one with the heart is what they said. They approached me and said, we currently have an employee who works on data entry and they're on the autistic spectrum. And we're wondering if this person can report to you. And I was just like, first I was just like, yeah, my kid's got autism, so I understand it. And I think that's where the request was really coming from. And it was, you know, they kind of said this person, you know, sometimes it can't be around the team. They need to follow certain procedures of how to work and how to be an employee. And sometimes, you know, they can have outbursts and meltdowns. And kind of what I heard was, we have somebody with autism working within our company, but we don't know how to manage them because of the autism. And in my head, I was just like, I've never managed anybody with autism before, you know, at a level which is at adult level. But anyway, I just, as Neil, with anything, I'll jump in and just say, I'll have a go. Is the way I put it. So meeting this individual, the first thing when meeting with them, we were sitting at the table and they weren't looking at me because I was new. I was alien. I was a different person. But then I had a picture of, which is here, which is of my little Blakey. And I advised that my son is on the autism spectrum. And then they looked at me straight in the eye. And then I said, and they wanted to know more about Blake and what he was like. And then I asked about him, what he does, and he told me that he goes on trips with his father around the world. They have hobbies and things together. I thought, that's really awesome. And then anyway, so a week later, the HR people said, this person really likes you, and he doesn't normally trust people. And the fact that he looked you in the eye, because people with autism find that very intimidating when you directly look at them straight in the eye or talk to them, that's why they sometimes may look to the side. And Blake was the same. But he said he's happy to report to you. I said, oh, awesome, cool. But cut long story short, this person went from data entry and he was so smart. We got him on to, he started working with operations. He then started becoming sales development support. So he was enhancing what Cognizant was adding to our database. He kept our CRM clean.
Oh, I can imagine.
Like, he was amazing. He was meticulous. And we had regular one-to-ones every week, and I kind of felt like this parenting figure of looking after him. But you know, when I joined, he only had data entry, but then he had three positions in the company and he was working with everybody else. And the way I looked at it was, I kind of saw my son within this person. Mm. And I said, this is maybe what I've got to look forward to when Blake is older. And he helped me understand how my Blakey might be thinking and why things will alarm him. And he helped me become a better dad. So I feel he helped me become a better understanding of somebody within the autism spectrum.
Mm-hmm.
And in return, I helped him have a voice in that company. And I still chat to him every now and then. And I'm super freaking proud of him. But yeah, we've really gone deep. And yeah, I love this. This is freaking awesome.
Yeah. that's a lovely story. And I think that just helps with even just like understanding people who haven't got autism or ADHD or anything like that. It just really puts into perspective that they might be feeling things. And I think it's just really important as a kind of leader to have that high emotional intelligence. And I think having that, it's just absolutely crucial to just pick up different nuances with people that they wouldn't normally do or they wouldn't normally act, and just ask them, like, because yeah, you just got to create that kind of environment of just being open and transparent, I think, for sure.
100%. And they always say, like, people that you meet, they'll always teach you something. So whether it's, you know, in sales or reps that you manage or meet, they teach you something about yourself or how you can, you know, help other people. And sometimes where people have been difficult, like with prospects, you know, they teach you how to be resilient. And I think another piece I heard from my therapist recently, where he said, Neil, with resilience, a lot of the time people think of it having meaning you had to have a hard and tough, strong mind. But he said the other side of resilience is knowing when to let go. And becoming comfortable with that. So letting go of the outcome, letting go of the fear of rejection, letting go of trying to be a perfectionist and just rolling with the punches and see where you kind of land. This has been a beautiful conversation with you, Ash. I think there may be a part three in the future coming up, because we can talk for hours, dude.
We have.
But I just wanted to kind of like come to a conclusion. So obviously in the first episode, we learned a lot about alternative career paths, personal development, sales techniques, your own journey from recruitment, then coming into sales leadership. And now you've got these six people that are lucky to have you and coming on board. So let's imagine the future Ash is going to watch this episode.
Yeah.
What three bits of advice would you give to your future self, Ash?
Three bits of advice I'd give my future self would possibly be maybe wear a hat next time. I would say just keep doing what you're doing. Just keep doing what you know, what's working. Try different things. And don't be afraid to say no to things. I think as leaders, you always kind of want to take on different things, right? And sometimes you take on too much. So it's just having that kind of ability to just kind of push stuff away when you're up against it yourself, you know, just to kind of manage the time, I would say.
I love that. Gun finger salute. That's some solid bars, my dude. I love that. So again, I wanted to say also a big thank you to our listeners, watchers, and subscribers who've joined us on this second chapter with Ashley. So as a reminder, Ashley's LinkedIn profile will be in the show notes and the comments if you'd like to connect with him, pick his brain on any of the topics that we've discussed today. And I'll also be putting the link into the original episode that preceded this one. And also we'll get in the links for Chris with Fearless to educate anybody and also to educate myself. But to support us in the SDR Disco Call Show, my request and simple request, it's quite easy for everyone to do, is if you're listening to this in your local podcast platform, please give us a rating and share this chapter. And if you're watching this on YouTube, what would really help out is a like, comment, and subscribe. And equally, share this with anybody that you think could benefit from Ashley's advice and the things that we've discussed today. But Ashley Ormond, a sales daddy to another, thank you so much for coming on board.
Thanks again,
awesome weekend.
Appreciate it.
Happy selling. You're more than welcome, mate. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the SDR Disco Call podcast today. We would like to get this message out to more and more sales development reps, so please like, comment, and share in your local podcast provider. If you don't want to miss a show, you can always send a blank email to sdrdiscocall@bcast, which is bcast.email, and you'll be added to our mailing list. We're also on the lookout for new guests, so if you work in the world of sales development as an SDR, BDR, MDR, or ADR, and feel that you have an important message or story to share, feel free to email us at podcast@happyselling.io, and we'd love to have you on board.